The following show is a replay of KTQA Daily Briefing. For more information, please call 253-330-8821 or visit us online at daily.ktqa.org. Good afternoon. It's 3 p.m. on Friday, April 3rd, and we're live on KTQA 95.3 FM here in Tacoma, and it is time for today's daily briefing. So let's get right to it. Go ahead. How are you today, Becky?
Oh, there you go. I was waiting for the how are you. I'm well, Sam. Thank you.
I was thinking about skipping it today, but then you gave me that look like, okay, where is it? And so here it is. So
I'm well.
Good. I'm glad that you're well. I am also well. Let us do the briefing now.
Certainly. As usual, state-level updates on COVID-19 can be found online in multiple languages at coronavirus.wa.gov. Health department officials are staffing a coronavirus Q&A line from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. 7 days a week at 1-800-525-0127, and for interpreters in other languages, press pound when they answer and say your language. Dialing 311 from your phone in Tacoma will get you the City of Tacoma's non-emergency information line, and dialing 211 helps connect you to community resources statewide through the United Way. You can also visit wa211.org online.
Moving on to new Washington state news, the governor has extended Washington statewide stay-at-home order through May 4th. Public gatherings remain banned, and non-essential businesses may reopen on May 5th. All state lands managed by the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Fish and Wildlife will remain closed through May 4th. We broke in yesterday around, like, right after the 6 p.m. rebroadcast and broke in with that, so we don't know if you heard that or not, so we'll tell you again. Implementation of new state building codes that were set to start on July 1st have been delayed to November 1st. Washington's Emergency Management Division alerts residents that the federal government will not ask to confirm your personal or banking details by email, phone, or text message, or demand a processing fee for residents to get their federal coronavirus checks. The Washington Attorney General's office says do not click on links in email or text messages relating to the stimulus checks, and do not provide your personal information. If you are contacted by a scammer, do not engage, even to tell them that you know it's a scam. Email addresses and phone numbers that are confirmed to be active are more valuable when selling to other scammers. Suspected scams may be reported to the Federal Trade Commission by calling toll-free 1-877-FTC-HELP. That's 1-877-382-4357, or by visiting ftccomplaintassistant.gov.
Locally here in Tacoma, Tacoma Public Schools plans to resume classes on Tuesday, May 5th, to fully comply with the current extension of the statewide stay-at-home order. The City of Tacoma's Solid Waste Management Division will reduce hours at the Household Hazardous Waste Disposal Facility at 3510 South Mullen Street, beginning Tuesday, April 7th. The facility will be open Fridays through Mondays, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. until further notice. Only essential household hazardous waste from residential customers will be allowed, including waste that cannot be safely stored at home until the facility resumes normal operations. Hazardous waste that can be stored temporarily at home, such as fluorescent light bulbs or batteries, should be kept there. For questions or more information, call 253-502-2100. And sad to announce that the annual Daffodil Parade, originally scheduled for Saturday, April 4th in downtown Tacoma, is canceled this year.
Literally a situation where it's better safe than sorry, but I'm sorry about that one. Moving on to Pierce County, and specifically Pierce County Transit. Pierce Transit is further reducing service beginning on April 6th. On Saturdays and Sundays, transit will operate a regular Sunday schedule. On weekdays, transit will operate according to a modified Sunday schedule. Riders can find out when their next bus is coming by checking their routes on piercetransit.org/change beginning on Sunday, April 5th. Riders waiting at bus stops can text 253-533-7084 and enter the bus stop number found on the poll. Pierce Transit can also be reached by calling 253-581-8000. And that's all the briefs we have for today. The big news was yesterday where they extended the stay-at-home order for by nearly like 3 weeks or 4 weeks or something like that.
Yeah. It was originally slated to lift April 6th, and so now we're essentially another month, so waiting through May 4th.
Okay. So here at home, in our makeshift studio here, we are still going through our feedback. I don't know if we've I know we have some text messages that we need to respond to. And Becky, you posted on Reddit the other day. Did you not? I seem to get that impression.
I did. I have posted on Reddit, and so
r/Tacoma, I believe.
Yeah. For those of you that are going through the internet in order to stay connected to folks.
Yeah,
there's some discussion there, and we welcome you there.
And we have some comments there that we're looking to get back to pretty much as soon as we're off this briefing here.
So. Yeah, so expect a little ping back to you.
Right. And then more specifically, my house is feeling more and more like a high school every day as Becky, who is the who is involved in the AP process at the school she works at, gears up to do something about the AP testing. I don't know the details, much like when I was in high school, but I know AP testing, something is happening right now.
Yeah, so the AP program is for advanced placement classes, and a lot of schools, including in Tacoma, have that option for high schoolers and maybe even some middle schoolers to take those AP classes, take those exams, and get the equivalent of high school or college credits, I mean. And usually those are 3-hour exams that are written and proctored with heavy security, and they're taken in a secure location in person. And for the first time ever, AP exams are going to be 45-minute online exams.
Wow.
And so we're learning a lot about that. If you got kids in the public schools within Tacoma who are AP students, I'm certain that their individual teachers and AP coordinators at their sites have been in contact with you. And Tacoma's been good about getting laptops distributed to AP students and high schoolers and seniors as students, senior students in all districts. So 12th graders in all districts are needing to finish up their senior requirements to graduate and things like that. So it does look more and more like a high school, or at least a high school administrator's office.
Yeah, I'll give you that. There's no change on the extension for school being out or anything like that, is there?
Well, OSPI, the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, has not announced that that schools will you know, be delayed. But we are all considering that initially when schools were ordered shut down through April 24th, with the earliest resumption date being April 27th, that the earliest resumption date now in order to fully comply will most likely be May 5th at the earliest.
Okay. And on my end, in significantly less scholastic matters, MLS has extended the ban on practices a bit. So, oh boy. Well, that's the news for today, and that's the local updates, and then the hyper-local updates, as in what's happening in my house with Becky and my two cats. The cats are fine, by the way.
We're practicing our soccer skills here.
Yeah, I did try to build a cat bed out of an old satellite dish and a bucket and some heavy things, and it didn't. I need to actually attach the satellite dish to the bucket in order to make a useful stand, because one of my cats was on it, and then he leaned on one side too hard and it flipped over, and now he's terrified of it. I feel kind of bad.
So, what are you doing at home? Practicing your construction skills, your soccer skills, doing some cooking and chores,
so that's,
and building with your kids.
That's,
there's a lot of stuff.
Two things I've built for the cats now, neither of which have worked out very well. So this is Friday, so we do have an interview today, but tomorrow and Sunday's update, as usual, will just be the daily briefing. There will be no interview, because we save those for the weekdays. Anyway, on to the interview.
Joining me now is Brent Hartinger. He is an author of fiction, a screenwriter, and a world traveler with lots of ties to Tacoma. He's joining me remotely today from Austin, Texas. Welcome to the show, Brent.
Hi, Becky. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
I want to start by talking about your first novel, Geography Club, and that kicked off the Russell Middlebrook series about a gay teen. Can you tell us a little bit about the series and about the character Russell?
So way back in the 1990s, I wrote this book about a gay teenager, and I eventually got an agent for it. And she read it, and she said, I think this should be a young adult novel, a YA novel. And I'm like, what's young adult? What's YA? But she explained it to me, books for and about teenagers. And so I reread the book. And man, we tried to sell it for so long. We're talking years, not quite a decade. But finally, it sold. And, you know, every publishing season, they have a list. They literally list your book in terms of importance. And I like to say that my book was the caboose. I mean, the editor loved it. He was very excited about it. A book about a gay teenager. There hadn't been a lot of books like that at the time. But nobody had any expectations because there hadn't really been a lot of books like this. So then the book came out. And by the end of the first week, we had gone into a third printing. So I guess I was lucky enough to ride a wave. I was writing about something before it sort of broke culturally, and I was able to ride that wave. Eventually, it became a feature film. 10 years later, it became a feature film. And I wrote a series of sequels about the same character, Russell Middlebrook, this 16-year-old gay kid who – what I did is I think it's kind of interesting. I think I aged him with each book, and I started a new series about Russell when he's in his 20s, when he's an adult. So they were no longer young adult literature. Mm-hmm. They were new adult, and sort of followed him over the years. And it's really been gratifying because people have been reading this character since 2003. They've watched him grow up, and it's been, you know, I've written 9 books now, I think. So it's been a really interesting experiment for me as a writer. Very satisfying.
Now, you are a man married to a man. Is Russell autobiographical in any way?
So Russell is somebody, I think he would like me and I like him. We have a lot in common, but we're not the same person. He's wiser than I am. He's funnier than I am. I think maybe I'm a little less neurotic than he is. There are differences here and there, but there are definitely the Venn diagram is a lot of overlap too. But you know, sometimes people, you know, when I'm dealing with teenagers, sometimes people really relate to this character. And when they ask me that, you know, and for a long time, I would give that answer and say, well, no, I'm not Russell. And I could see the disappointment on their face. So now frequently, when I talk to a teenager, I just say, yeah, I'm Russell.
So you talked about learning what young adult or YA literature is. Is this Russell Middlebrook series geared towards LGBTQ young adults or a general audience of young adult readers?
Well, that's sort of the age-old question, isn't it? Because, I mean, I totally respect, and Toni Morrison famously said that she doesn't write her books for white people, you know, that she writes her books for herself and for African-American readers. I think that's really awesome, and I love the whole speech she gave about that. But I guess I've always thought I write my books for myself and whoever is interested in them, and I guess I didn't ever see that as being writing just for LGBTQ teenagers. I was speaking once and this 12-year-old boy came up to me and he said, I really relate to Russell. And we got to talking and I think I assumed, I made something alluding to gay kids and said, oh, I'm not gay. And I said, oh, but you just told me you really relate to Russell. He said, yeah, but Russell feels like an outsider. He feels like his friends knew who he was, that they wouldn't be his friends anymore. He doesn't feel like he fits in. All the things that a gay kid might feel, but that he said, everybody feels that way sometimes. And it was like, oh, okay. So it took a 12-year-old boy to explain to me sort of the universal appeal of this character that I thought maybe, I mean, at the time, I guess I thought it would be a real niche character because I'd been told that so many times by editors and agents. And so it took, I guess, the audience was ahead of the writer in that case, just like the audience was ahead of the publishing industry. The audience was even ahead of me that especially the younger generation, these sorts of issues, it's just not an issue at all. It was more of an issue 10, 15, 20 years ago, but now it's not an issue at all, which I think is great. It's awesome. You know, it's fantastic.
It's interesting. You know, those of us that have looked at young adult literature or film in general in the last decade or so have really seen a lot of change in the both marketability and acceptability and almost passé nature of having a gay character, LGBTQ character. And it's almost to the point where if you have, it seems to me, an ensemble cast in a particular story or series or franchise, and one of your characters isn't gay, lesbian, bisexual, or trans, it's like, did you really do your research? Is that really representative of what a handful of, you know, 18s would really look like? So it's kind of neat.
But I think you're hinting at the truth here, that it's not advocacy, it's reflecting reality. I mean, I think we all watch Friends now, and we get this creepy feeling like, oh my God, what did they do with all the people of color? Like, everybody in New York is white. And it's like, that was not true when Friends was on the air. It wasn't true when every romantic comedy ever made was about straight white people. There were black people falling in love, and Latino people and Asian people. The reality is Hollywood and literature was not reflecting reality. It was catering to a segment of the population, you know, an entitled segment that expected everything to look like them. And now all that's happened, the only thing that's happened for the people who were threatened, really, the only thing that's happened is now art is reflecting reality more accurately, still not really completely accurately, but more accurately than before. And frankly, as a white person, I think that's awesome, because I want to see more stories that I haven't seen before. I want to see a different take, a different perspective. I think we all do. And I think, you know, I remember when I used to run a website about LGBTQ characters in the media, and we had a countdown clock for these two soap opera characters, these gay characters. Will they ever kiss? And the countdown clock went to 2.5 years before they finally kissed, and it was like a peck on the cheek. And now, you know, that seems ridiculous. I look back, this was 2009, and it seems utterly insane. And, you know, in this day and age, when there is so much that's going wrong in the world and things seem so broken and wrong, it isn't true about everything. In many respects, society, I think, is getting better. We are making progress, and it doesn't seem like it, because once something changes, you don't really remember what things were like before. But things are advancing, and it's awesome too. And I've sort of had a front row seat at that, since I've often been the subject of a lot of these discussions, my work, and I've been discussing, you know, other people's work. And I mean, I often say, you know, I work in a lot of different causes, but I was really, really lucky. If social change is about a relay race, which I think it is, you know, you hand the baton off to the person next to you, and then they, you know, you start the race and you hand it off, and they continue the race and you hand it off. And I feel like, you know, as a gay person, I was really, really lucky to be sort of holding the baton towards the end of the race. And that's an honor and a privilege. And it's been really fascinating. Not that we're there yet, but we're getting closer.
Well, talking about lots of projects that you've been involved in and that storytelling, can you tell us a little bit about the Real Story Safe Sex project that you started?
So about 7 years ago, I created an online project for some of my author friends to write about safer sex practices for LGBTQ kids. And they wrote about their own characters dealing with these issues. And these stories are available. They're available online in the author's websites. Unfortunately, Amazon decided that my story, which was about safe sex practitioners, violated their guidelines, and they took it down. So now it's not available on Amazon, even though it's available at other places. And that was really frustrating to me. I tried to explain to them. It's like, dude, this isn't pornographic. You know, this is this is safer sex instruction. But they didn't listen. So there you go.
So where can people find out a little bit more about that if we're interested in hearing some of those perspectives through the lens of different characters?
There is a link on my website, which is brenthardingdrudeau.com.
Cool. Let's look a little bit closer to home in Tacoma. Last year, you wrapped up a movie based on your book Project Payday that was originally set in Tacoma. What Tacoma elements play a role in the book and the film?
So when I was a kid, there was this urban legend that there were the China tunnels on downtown Tacoma. And my friends and I spent many an afternoon looking for the China tunnels. So I wanted to write a book that sort of honor that. And then as I got older, I learned about, you know, the Tacoma Method and the horrible legacy of racism. And in the 19th century, when the Asian people, the economy, there was a downturn in the economy, and Tacoma rounded up all the Asian people, put them on the train and sent them to Portland. And it became known as the Tacoma Method. And that's what the Reconciliation Park along Ruston Way is all about, you know, honoring that and asking for forgiveness for the Chinese American community. So I wrote a book back in 2007, Project Payday, about three kids who they're 15 years old and they feel that they shouldn't have to get a summer job because they're only 15. And that's the year of the optional summer job. But their parents insist. So they scheme behind their parents' back. They invent fake jobs and then they embark on a series of get rich quick schemes in order to make the money that they would have been making from summer jobs to prove to their parents that their jobs are real. And then over the course of the book, they become embroiled. You know, it's a series. Everything they do, it's sort of a comedy of errors. And everything they try, counting jelly beans in a jar and diving for sunken treasure. And everything is sort of a bust. And of course, they end up working harder than if they just got jobs in the first place. But one of the chapters involves the China tunnels and this whole experience with racism in Tacoma. I thought when the book came out, you know, it did fine. It wasn't one of my big hit books, but I thought, you know, sort of a cross between The Goonies and Stranger Things, even though Stranger Things hadn't come out yet, but it had that sort of retro Goonies vibe.
Little kids on bikes kind of thing, right?
Exactly. Searching, you know, trying to solve mysteries. And but I hadn't gotten any inquiries. My agent hadn't gotten any inquiries from Hollywood. So I wrote my own screenplay, and then I started pitching it myself. And I didn't tell anybody that it was based on a novel because I didn't really think that helped my case. And eventually I found a producer. And he optioned it and then ultimately got financing and purchased it. And then it was filmed last summer and I was on the set, which was awesome, in Pennsylvania. Unfortunately, now it's sort of every town USA. I wanted them to film in Tacoma, but that didn't work out for a lot of different reasons. There's still the story about the racism. And so that is in post-production now, although who knows with coronavirus. All release schedules are all screwed up. It was going to be released later this year. Now we shall see. I think it'll be around. Hopefully it'll be in theaters, maybe not just a streaming release. But that was very satisfying. It was very weird. It was very satisfying. It was weird. You know, once you finish a screenplay, your job is done. And then you go to the set and then it becomes, you know, film is much more collaborative than writing a novel, which is really great. But it's also really different. So it was mostly my job to be a spectator and let all the other good people do their job. And if you look closely, I was working with the set designer. There are little nods and hints to The Goonies and Stranger Things throughout the movie if you are eagle-eyed. But it was a very fascinating experience, fun experience. I mean, it's incredibly flattering when you write something and it gets published. It's even more flattering when you write something and then people spend all this money and all these people congregate in order to film your words. And, you know, they bring things, meaning the cast. It's like, oh, that's what you look like. I've met you before. I know you. I created you, but I didn't know what you exactly looked like. And then, other cool thing, I was able to go back. I got the rights back. The book had finally gone out of print with HarperCollins, and I got the rights back. And I was able to rewrite the book sort of to describe the characters more like the actors and to change a few things that I had written in the screenplay, actually quite a bit of things that I thought I actually liked in the screenplay that were not in the book. And then I will be able to do a re-release of that book. The book is not currently in print, but it will be whenever the movie comes out. And that was really fun. That was another sort of interesting writing experiment. I don't think too many writers have had the chance to write a book, adapt the book for the screen, and then rewrite the book according to the screenplay and sort of have three spins at the roulette wheel, three chances to tell this particular story. So we'll see how it turns out.
Sounds really cool. We'll be looking for it on the horizon. And I guess if anyone has a copy of Project Payday kicking about, it might be a little bit of collector's item, first edition. Well,
yeah, that's right.
Could be a cool exercise in comparing how those things changed. I want to hear a little bit about yourself as a digital nomad, because for a while you did live in Tacoma in the Seattle area, but you call yourself a digital nomad who travels the world indefinitely with your husband. So, what's that all about? How did you get started on doing that?
So I was born in Olympia and I was raised in Tacoma, and then I left for college and then I came back and lived there a few years when my mom was sick with Alzheimer's, and then we moved to Seattle. And then 3 years ago, yes, about 4 years ago, we decided, hey, let's sell our house and just travel indefinitely. So my husband and I, that's what we did. And since then, we lived in Miami, Malta, Italy, Bulgaria, Georgia, Eastern Europe, Vietnam, Thailand. We were just in Mexico City, Switzerland, Barcelona. We lived in lots of different places along the way. And basically, we just rent an apartment and live in these different cities, get to know people. And it has been a revelation. We've loved it. I remember all of my life, I've heard about the sort of simple living movement. And I've been a little judgy, okay, well, this is, you know, virtue signaling or something. And now I understand sort of the beauty that literally everything you own is in a suitcase. And so when you buy something new, you have to get rid of something old. And that sounds like it would be a problem, but it's liberating knowing that everything you own becomes intentional. You are owning it for a reason. And if you don't use it, or if you don't enjoy it, what's the expression? If it doesn't give you joy, get rid of it. And I guess the other side of the experience has been, we have met both this wonderful community. We didn't even know what this was called when we started doing it. It's like, where are we going to live? And then we heard the term digital nomad, people who work remotely while nomading around the world. And it's like, oh, yes, that's us. That's what we do. And there is this community, or at least there was. This is changing, too, with the coronavirus. But there is this great community that has enabled us to really feel, ironically, we feel more grounded and more socially active than we ever did back at home, because we've got this community. You know, we make a point to meet our friends in different cities, and then we get to know people in the city where we're living, local people. And now we have friends all over the world. And you know, among long-term travelers, there's the debate, are people more alike than we are different? Different cultures, different races, different cities, civilizations. And, you know, you can make a case for, wow, people are really different. Asia is really, all the Asian countries are different from each other, and they're different from Western Europe. But ultimately, my takeaway is, oh my God, people are so much, I mean, the differences are interesting and endlessly fascinating, but we're so much alike. And everywhere we go, it's like people just want to be happy. They want to protect their kids. They want to laugh. They want to share a meal together. And it has made me feel, and it has made me understand this whole idea that we have of borders and boundaries between countries, how that's not real. That's all in our mind. It's artificial. That, in fact, the world is one thing, and people are just yearning for connection and to understand each other. And I sort of thought, especially as an American in 2019, 2020, there might be some resentment and prejudice and hostility. And people are so open-hearted and so welcoming. And it has really made me feel, you know, there's a lot to feel depressed about in the world today. But the experience of meeting all these people and really feeling like I have so much in common with my friends in Thailand and my friends in Vietnam, my friends in Georgia, my friends in Italy, and really coming to understand that it isn't about your nationality. It isn't about your race. It's about who you are inside and the connection and your willingness to sort of open your heart to other people. And, you know, I'm in my 50s, and I did not think that I would ever have such a radical change this late in my life. Most things, they say, there are pros and cons to everything. There are pluses and minuses. And this is the first thing I've ever done in my life where I have to really think hard to think, what are the cons? Because it's been mostly pros. It's been wonderful. And our cost of living, you know, we are incredibly privileged to be Americans traveling in countries where the cost of living is so much less. But the end result is we're spending way less than half of what we were spending living in Seattle, which of course means life becomes less of a slog, less of a grind, and one can be happy and one can be more content. Again, I'm speaking from a place of incredible privilege, and I acknowledge that. But that said, you know, if we have to live somewhere, we'd much rather live this way. And, you know, shopping locally, supporting local economies as much as possible, and people seem very welcoming to have us there. Anyway, it's been a fascinating, wonderful experience. And I'm not a innately adventurous person. I'm not an intrepid explorer kind of risk taker at all. And the fact that I could do this and feel so comfortable, frankly, my life is so much less stressful now than it was just maintaining, just owning a house in Seattle with the cost of living and healthcare in America and all of that. My life is so much more less stressful now. So it's an option. And I mean, you know, if anybody's interested, feel free to check out my husband's and my website, Brent and Michael are goingplaces.com, where we talk about why we did what we did and nuts and bolts of it all.
Sounds super neat. Even as you travel the world, what's one thing about Tacoma or the Pacific Northwest that really sticks with you?
Oh, I have such a fondness for the whole downtown area. And this is what Project Payday is about too. Sort of the the grace and mystery of the downtown area and the natural beauty. I mean, I have seen the world. The world is beautiful, but the natural beauty in the Northwest, it ranks anywhere. You know, it holds up anywhere. And I, one of my happy places is just walking along Ruston Way and just hanging out and watching the water and taking the ferry out to Vashon Island. And I will never get tired of that. I mean, that's true that where you grew up becomes, you know, it is part of your heart never leaves there. And that's definitely true in my case.
And Brent, how can listeners follow along with your travels or learn more about your work?
So we are on all social media, especially Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. If you go to our website, BrentandMichaelAreGoingPlaces.com, you can follow us. You can check out all the information there. And for me as an author, my author website, BrentHardinger.com. I'm also on social media. You can follow me. And I have sort of an open book policy. If anybody wants to chat with me, talk to me, ask me a question, send me an email or contact me, direct message me on any of the different platforms. And I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you so much for answering my questions today and conversing with me on KTQA Daily Briefing. Brent Hardinger is an author of fiction, a screenwriter, and a world traveler, still maintaining his ties to Tacoma. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Becky.
For City of Tacoma non-emergency information, dial 311. Dialing 211 will connect you to statewide community resources. You can email us at daily@ktqa.org, or you can call or text us at 253-330-8821. Talk to you tomorrow.
KTQA LP 95.3, Tacoma.